Welcome to the Dope Black Woman podcast, the podcast where we share stories of Black excellence as part of our safe digital sisterhood. I'm Leanne Levos.
I'm Rashan, but you can call me Shan.
I'm Livs.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Hey
Livs,
what's
going on? I'm good, how are you guys?
Good, actually. It's been a good month, like a busy month, but a really good month. Like, good things have happened. I traveled for the first time since the pandemic, well, since I moved to Jamaica, which was nice to be outside for a little bit. Yeah, it's been a good month. I can't complain.
Yeah, same. Anyway. I only paused because I was like, who's going to go first? I've been in a really, really good headspace and on really positive vibes recently. And it's interesting, actually, because I don't know if it's because of my anxiety or because it hasn't been this like level of happiness in, like, even from before the pandemic, just ages. I didn't realize that I hadn't felt happy in a long time until I was like feeling what I'm feeling now. And I was talking to someone about it the other day. What did she say? I said to her that, like, I'm almost planning for it to like end, for like the level of happiness to end, because I'm not used to it. And then she was like, no, but you should plan for it to continue. If you want it to be your new norm, it can be. And I was like, you know what, it's actually perspective. Like, I was focusing on the negative. I was trying to find a negative from a very positive situation. And I just feel like it's important to share that for anybody else that could be feeling the same.
You know, like, the pandemic is slowly drawing to an end, and I think a lot of people are looking forward to the future. And when you live with like a long-term mental illness, whether that is anxiety or depression, it is kind of this like, what if something goes wrong? Like, what if something bad happens? Like, what if this feeling doesn't last forever? So I totally get that.
I was just gonna say, I think it's a really normal reaction to have. And I think for me, therapy has built in this kind of safety net for me, where even when I have those thoughts, it's like, yeah, this probably will come to an end, this feeling of like joy and happiness, but whatever comes ahead of it, I feel prepared to take on that challenge or to take on that shift. And like we say all the time, go and see your therapist. It's an important part of... No, it is. Like,
It is. I'm laughing because I ain't seen my therapist in a minute.
Yeah, therapy saves all of us, I think. But today, actually, this is something that probably many of us should go and see a cognitive behavioral therapist about, right, Livs? What are we talking about today?
Well, we are talking about taboos and just kind of going through some of the things that even, you know, on the Dope Black Women podcast, you may have never heard of us speak about before, or conversations which just can be quite difficult to have. And something that I wanted to bring to the table is skin picking. I think that this is like one of those things that if you do it, it consumes so much of your life, but for other people, it's something they probably never thought about in 100 years. And yeah, I just wanted to kind of explore it, really, because I know for myself, it impacts me all the time, where for people who I guess aren't familiar with it, when anxiety strikes, or sometimes it can be a compulsive need from having OCD, you know, you'll start with like a small little scratch and you will just pick and pick and pick until you scar yourself. And I now have scars all over my body, which are self-inflicted. And I think it's just something people don't really talk about. And I guess especially like now that we're getting into the warmer weather, people are going to be wearing less clothes, you're probably going to be seeing some people that might have scars. And I guess just raising that awareness that like you don't always know what people are going through or where those scars come from.
Yeah, I definitely have to deal with this a lot. And I remember when I worked in Birmingham, it got to the point where it was so like overwhelming and consuming that like people at work would mention it to me, but more in like a way because they wanted to help me, not like, oh, you're picking your face again. It was like, oh, what can we do to help? And then literally what they would do was, they would, every time I went to pick my face, they'll pull my hand down And then eventually the embarrassment from that, even though it wasn't trying to be them trying to embarrass me, but the embarrassment from that made me stop. So I feel like now it only happens in peak. So now it's only when I'm like extremely anxious or extremely stressed, I'll go through phases throughout the year where I'll be like picking like crazy. But before it was literally 24/7. And I think what's so frustrating about it is literally like what you just said about like when summer comes. So for me, because it's on my face, it's not a seasonal thing. It's 24/7. Do you get what I mean? Mm. So I'll get to a point where my like scars will start. Oh, I'm a fun emotional. I'll get to a point where like my scars will start to fade, and then I'll be like, something will trigger my anxiety or trigger me to feel stressed, and then I'll start picking again, and then I'm going through it all over again. And I guess you can probably relate to it, Livs, where like you're picking and then it starts bleeding and then you're still picking, and then you get that like lay of skin the next day where you try to like not pick, and then you pick again, and it's just like this constant thing until eventually it becomes like a flat smooth scar, and it's just such a vicious cycle to keep being in.
When did it start for you guys? Were you teenagers? Like, was there a specific moment where you remember it being a satisfying way of relieving stress?
I'll probably say my teenage years is when it started, and I don't think it was, I can't really pinpoint it down to like one specific event, or you know, I can't really remember the first time I started. I guess because like most people have like, you know, if they see like a scab they might pick it or whatever, but like it takes a while until you realize like this is a repetitive thing I do. Mm-hmm. Like this is a repetitive thing I keep going back to. And I like it, yeah, it does give some kind of release. The other thing that I would do, and I still kind of do sometimes, is that, and again, this is, I think this is quite taboo, is like picking ingrown hairs
on my legs.
Yeah, because like you look at it and you're like, I need to get that out. Like I can't live with that there. Like I need to pick that out. It's causing me stress to see this little bump. But now you've made yourself bleed and eventually scar. But that small, sweet release you get for like the first 10 seconds makes it worth it. Mm-hmm. It's so bad. It's so bad because it is self-inflicted. And I think, like you mentioned, Rashan, with the bleeding, this is like another reason it's taboo. Because like if you're out and you're doing it, I've had people be like, oh, why are you picking yourself? Like, ew, like it's kind of gross. But, you know, people don't realize that it is a coping mechanism.
And I think it's hard, especially when you've got like, so obviously like before everyone was like anti-black women, not everyone was anti-black women, but I feel like we wasn't as desired as I feel like we are becoming now, if that makes sense. And I feel like now there's like a hyper sexualization or hyper focus on like black women's skin. And you'll see people like, oh, skin goals, skin this, skin that. I've seen like a rise in skin bloggers, and nothing's wrong with that. That's all well and great, yeah. But when I follow pages like that, I realize that sometimes it can be quite harmful to my own ideas and my own thinking, because none of those people have skin like me. Like most of the skin bloggers that I know, their skin is flawless.
Yeah, flawless, honey.
They don't have, do you understand what I mean? So be like, use this product. It's great for hyperpigment. Use this product. It's great for hyperpigmentation. And then they'll show you before and after, and both of the pictures look the same. And I'm like, sis, show me when you actually had hyperpigmentation. Like, be honest with us, please.
100%. And I guess like as well, because as you mentioned, like, you know, this whole kind of like, oh, melanin popping, like melanin goals, like da da da. But then you look at it and you're like, I know even on a good day, my skin doesn't look like that.
that glow, my skin's never seen that glow, even in Jamaica.
Oh god. And I guess that, and there are similar things that people do, you know, like picking your hair is a big one. I know some people do. Mm-hmm. Like whether that's picking it from like straight off the top of your head, like, and it's a kind of thing where, you know, to some people it's like, why would you do that? Like, why would you do that to yourself? But it is so much about like just gaining just the tiniest bit of control in a situation.
I mean, do we call those taboos because they are, I feel like we should define what a taboo is.
I guess I would call it a taboo because like, I'm thinking about the situations I've been in where I've been out, like when I say out, I mean like not at home. So I could be at work and I've picked and now my arm is bleeding. And someone's like, oh, your arm is bleeding. And I'm like, yeah, I picked it. And they're looking at me like I'm disgusted. A weirdo. Like they're disgusted. Or my arm is literally red raw from where I've been scratching it. And they're like, oh my God, what did you do? And you're like, I just been scratching. And like, they're looking at you like, what is wrong with this girl? Rather than out of a place of sympathy. Like, it's really good to hear that your co-workers in Birmingham were so supportive, because I think that is quite rare. Like, even with my friends and family, if they see me doing it, they're just like, stop picking, you know?
No, yeah, my mom, a previous partner I was with, they were like that. And I know it comes from a good place because they know how upset it gets me, but they're not understanding that I can't just stop. Of course, if I could stop, I would stop. Because why on earth do I want to have scars all over my face? Like, just think about it. Do you know what I mean? Like, everyone just think rationally. If it was as easy as you saying, just stop, I would not have done it in the first place. You understand?
Mm. Yeah. When you're picking and someone says, stop picking, it's the equivalent of being depressed and someone's like, just be don't happy. Worry about it. Smile. It's like, okay, thanks. I never thought of that.
That's a good point, actually. So what is an effective mechanism for people to support you in reducing the amount of picking that you do, Livs? Like, what would be, Orshan, what would be some tips for people or family members, friends? Like, how do you get somebody to stop picking? Because I would do that, like, instinctively. I'm sure I've been on Skype with Shan and she's picked her face and I'm like, Shan, stop your face.
There's some relationships that you have with people where there is a safe space for you to do that. I mean, I can't remember a time that you've done that, but you probably have, and I haven't reacted to it or felt like negative feelings towards it, because it's just, like, we have a sisterhood between us. Do you understand what I mean? And it's also the way you do it and the intention behind it. That's why I said a minute ago, like, I know when my mum does it, for example, she's not trying to do it to humiliate me or whatever, but I still think with her, there's a lack of understanding to a certain degree. I don't even know if there's lack of understanding, because she picks her hair, so she must get it. But I mean, like, I don't think there's compassion when she delivers it to me. I need more compassion from her. I need more empathy. Like, oh man, like, just move my hand politely, just be nicely. But she'll be like, stop picking, what are you doing? Like, babes, calm down. Like, my face, not yours.
To be honest, the main one is like, don't bring it up.
Okay.
Which I know it sounds stupid, but like, don't make me more conscious of it than I already am. Like, if we want to talk about it at a time when I'm not actually picking. Mm. And you might be like, oh, I saw this product, it looks really good. Or like, have you tried this cream? But if I'm picking and then you go into, why do you pick? Why do you do that? You're now causing me to spiral. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you're not helping in that situation. It's kind of like, yeah, if someone was having a mental breakdown or anxiety attack, that isn't the moment to then be like, so why are you depressed? Like,
that's what I was saying. It's to do with the approach. Do you get what I mean? Because if someone just says it and they're not evoking a conversation from it, it's like, you can just take that on and do whatever. You either stop picking or you continue. Whereas if someone's now making you feel guilty for doing it, I feel like that's where it becomes a problem. It's like, I did some research the other day into, I know this isn't the exact same thing at all, but I did research into how to support someone who self-harms. And it was saying, like, stop, don't try not to control the fact that they are self-harming, but try to find solutions for the feelings they get when they self-harm. Do you get what I mean? So mm-hmm. it's like changing the narrative, because ultimately when someone's doing that, it's a personal thing to them, as opposed to it being like to you who might be observing them.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you bring up self-harm, because again, I think this is why it's a taboo. Actually, my therapist told me that picking is a form of self-harm, because you are harming your skin. And like we've said, you are leaving yourself with scars. And you know, obviously there are levels to it, and it's not as dangerous as other, I guess, more well-known forms of self-harm. But like, you're still harming yourself, which is the definition. And I guess, like, you know, to someone who doesn't understand, it's just like, why on earth would you do that to yourself? Like, why on earth would you scar your own body? And I think that's interesting.
Well, I mean, I think the interesting thing is that obviously it's not your intention to scar yourself. As Shan pointed out, it's something, obviously you don't want the scars. It's the actual process that you're seeking out, right?
It's a release. It's a release for that 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Which and then afterwards you're like, oh God, what have I done?
Afterwards I have to cry. Not another 10 more flowers.
Another one.
Now I've got to buy more expensive skin products. No.
Do you know what the worst is? Like, say you're using a skin product that like says it helps the scars and it's like, you know, use 10 days in a row. And on day 4, you start picking again and you're like, oh God, I
No, stop. It's when you're using one and you love it and it's like, don't use an open wound. You're like, no, my whole face is open.
Gosh, this sounds horrible, guys. I'm not gonna lie.
Honestly, it is, but like, you have to
like, I hate to be you.
And I'm trying to think really hard if I have a similar taboo behavior, but I can't think of any at the moment. cheating, that's probably my taboo.
Girl,
I am a serial cheater.
No,
stop it. Leanne
said, this is the AA group. My name is Leanne, and I am a serial cheater.
No, it's true. This relationship that I'm in now, sorry to all of my exes who don't know this, but I don't think I've in any of my relationships. That's just the truth of it.
Really?
Not that I can recall.
I mean, I know we spoke about cheating before on the podcast, but I didn't know it was to that extent.
Honestly.
And here's my justification is that I move countries a lot, and sometimes when
you're
gonna have a justification for cheating. Oh Lord. Protect Leanne.
I got holes in different area codes. Leanne's got holes.
Not anymore. I'm fully reformed.
Yeah.
Learned my lessons, as you might have heard from the last episode that I did with my ex. I've learned from my errors, and I'm on the mend. I've sought therapy.
Brilliant.
She's a new woman.
I'm a new woman.
Can I just shout out the accountability, please? First,
we love it.
Honest, and then that you're now getting help to correct the error of your ways. Shout out a woman in therapy.
This is the first step, guys.
Women cheating is probably quite taboo because I think we have this perception of what someone who cheats must be like. And I think our listeners know Leanne well enough that, like, you are you don't live up to the, let's just say it how it is, you don't live up to the stereotypes of what people consider a cheater. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel people consider a cheater as like, she's a home wrecker, she's a hoe, like, this, that, and the third. But like, there's layers to it, and it's quite complex.
Even within my cheating behavior, I think I've tried to maintain some boundaries. So I've never cheated on somebody else, with somebody who's also in a relationship. So I'm
right. Not, yeah.
Wouldn't that be better though?
No, because then you're affecting.
Why? So you can ruin two relationships.
No, because then it's not. Then it's not really cheating, is it? Then it's just like a science experiment, you know.
A side hustle.
Do you know what I mean? It's like no one's getting hurt really because both of you clearly want to be with your partners. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, there are some people who might view it that way.
I love how Rashan tried to rescue it and Leanne was like,
I mean, that's how I view it. I feel like, I don't know. I don't know, you know.
Leanne, something you do actually that I thought was quite taboo, but I guess maybe I'm just more mature now, is like even just being friends with your ex. Like in my head I'm like, could I be with someone that was friends with their ex, or even be with someone friends with my ex? I'm not sure, but Leanne seems to manage it really healthily.
That is probably taboo behavior, and I have definitely been in relationships where it's been an issue. And here's the thing, I'm not friends with my exes immediately after. Like, there has to be time and space for us to be apart, not speak to each other, not engage, which is why I said in the last episode that we did, I said, we're not really friends, but we're not enemies. And we're somewhere in the middle. Mm. I'm hoping that doing that episode would bring us closer to being legitimate friends. But yeah, I mean, most of my exes, I guess we never really, well, they might be upset now that they know I've cheated on them, but before today, I think the relationships that I've been in ended for, they didn't end acrimoniously. And so kind of there not being any bad blood, it was just really time and space and distance that was needed for us to kind of, and I wouldn't say we're best friends. You know, I don't sit down and talk to them every day. It's not like when I'm on the phone with Shan every day or messaging her, but I actually have an ex who every day, every Christmas Eve and every day, every Mother's Day, he calls me to make sure I'm okay. We do a little check-in, make sure, you know, each other is okay. And we've been friend. That's the definition of friendship. It's just somebody that, you know, will look out for you if I needed to, you know, if I was in an emergency and I needed some help, I wouldn't be afraid to call one of my exes and ask them for help. You know, are you guys not friends with any of your exes? Because lots of my friends think it's weird that I'm friends with my exes as well.
I'm not friends with any.
I'm definitely on, like, except for the last one. Lol, that'll be a story for another day. I'm definitely on, like, calm terms with them. Like, if I see you, I can say hi. It's not awkward. I really hate, I don't know if it's a phobia or what, but I really, like, the idea of being close to someone, romantic or platonic, and then bumping into them and the air not being clear really makes me feel very uncomfortable. So I always try to make sure that things are to some level of, like, some sort of level of being amicable. So there's no one that I've, like, dated in the past or spoke to in the past that I could walk past and it could be awkward. Do you get what I mean? And, like, all of those people, it's just really good vibes. But I think I was doing a lot of reading recently about different things, and it's made me, like, question whether or not it's, like, a positive, like, it's good to be, it's like, whether or not it's okay to be friends of your ex. Do you get what I mean? And I also find that when I'm, like, on the verge of being in a serious relationship, or when I'm, like, dating someone and I actually care about their opinions, because sometimes I don't care, the type of guys that I go for, the idea that I'm still on good terms with my ex, something that they don't really like. Do you get what I mean? So now it's like, is that a situation that I can bother to, like, try and defend or like challenge? I don't know. Is that something that, like, if I ask you guys, do you think that's something that, is that a reasonable expectation, do you think?
I think it's a reasonable expectation, to be honest. Some people are uncomfortable with it. Like, for me, I've only ever dated men who are also friendly with their exes. So what that looks like and the kind of boundaries that they put in place is a different conversation, because I don't expect you to be yapping on the phone with the girl at, like, 11, 12 o'clock. But you know, if there's some connection via business, or you guys were in a relationship for a really long time and you're still, the families are very still, you know, still very much connected, especially if you're dating somebody older who might have a kid or something like that, I think it's kind of understandable. But I don't think it's an unrealistic expectation for somebody to say, this makes me uncomfortable and it's not okay, as long as they're not doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Yeah, the family dynamic I find very weird. Yeah. Not so much now, like, in my age group, but, like, if I look at, like, older people in my family or older relatives or whoever that I know, and I see that sort of dynamic where, like, one of them might have split up with, they might have split up with a person, but they're still really close to their family. And it's, like, a new person present. That idea, I know it is common, but I still find it very weird. Because if I was that new person, I would be like, what on earth? Like, what is going on here? Even though I know there's, like, levels to it and there's, like, different nuances and there's different things to consider as to why that might be the situation. But maybe I'm too insecure, I don't know. But I'll just be like, you need to tell her to move. ASAP.
She needs to realise that I took her place, okay?
Do you know what I mean? This feels like you've got attachment issues. Like, I don't get it.
I think it's hard because it's kind of like, obviously if they're coming to family gatherings and whatnot, that's one thing. But at what point do you almost tell your partner? So, like, say in Leanne's case, it's like, one of my exes, you know, we kind of talk, but, you know, we're not like close friends. And then he texts you on that Mother's Day and he drops you a line and your current partner's like, oh, who's that? And you're like, da-da-da. And he's like, you talk to da-da-da? And you're like, yeah, but it's not a big deal. And then they're like, why don't you say anything? And then it's like, but I didn't want to make it a thing. Like, I didn't want to make it seem bigger than it actually is, you know?
The thing is, as you were saying that, I was literally thinking, if that happened to me, the person would have known they did that prior to that date. But I think it's because I'm naturally a very transparent person. And this is something I've learned in dating that I'll not be doing anymore. I overshare. I tell them everything. I'm too honest. No more. No more. Oi, never again. Because you know what, yeah? It actually creates insecurities in other person. Well, not all the time. Not all the time. But it can, for some men, create insecurities that just don't need to be there. Do you understand what I mean? So for me, that sort of thing, I would tell you from the get-go, because I don't want awkward situations to happen now on Mother's Day where you're getting mad on a day that I should be reflecting because of a text message. Like, it's not that deep. It's a text. Do you get it? Did he fly here? Is he in the bed next to us in the morning? Just chill out.
Yeah.
So interestingly enough, that very scenario that you just proposed actually happened to me on my birthday. We were on holiday. I told you guys we went away to the country, did like a staycation.
Yes, you did. Spending that money, honey, living on that beach, like
on that boat. Yes, treat like a motherfucking queen, a motherfucking princess, because that's who you are. Doctorate,
yes, honey.
Doctorate, baby.
Well, it didn't really end that well. Thankfully. So on my birthday, or the day after my birthday, when we're getting ready to go back to Kingston, one of my exes called to wish me happy birthday. And actually, in being the transparent, oversharing person that I am, you know, I started chit-chatting with the person and I was like, oh, you know, yeah, I'm here with my partner or whatever. We're on, you know, we're doing a staycation. And then I put him on speakerphone and I was like,
oh no, you're doing a lot. I made it a three-way call. Are you mad? I'll punch in your neck for that. No, obviously I don't condone violence. I'm just joking.
Do you want to talk to him? You want to say hello? Everyone get involved. Family reunion.
I was like, hey John, meet you know, Patrick, whatever, using pseudonyms obviously. I was like, hey John, meet Patrick. Patrick, meet John. Started a full conversation between the three of them. And my partner was very, very, very accommodating until I hung up the phone.
He was acting. He is waiting for that Oscar because man was acting his heart out.
Acting his proper Golden Globe behavior, because let me tell you, cussing that put down from Negril to Kingston, which is a hour drive. I never get so much cussing in my life. It was. And so I've learned, as Shan pointed out, to not overshare. That's the other.
But in that situation, just, I mean, not to pry too much into your business because it's an active one, but in that situation, was the issue more to do with like the phone call or like everything?
Oh, it was the issue was the length of the phone call. So not.
And I think that's fair enough.
Yeah, which I completely agree with. Like, I held my hands up and I'm like, yeah. 45 minutes is a long time to
45 minutes. You're taking that.
I thought you were gonna say 10 at the 15. Very, very most.
Libs, I thought 15. I thought, okay, 5 minutes when she was chatting, 10 minutes time to wrap. Yeah. 45. Leanne, that's longer than EastEnders episode. You need to chill out.
That is a short film.
Do you know how out of order that is? That's actually an album. Do you get it? You listen to a whole album from track 1 to 11. No, stop. What's going on? I'm so happy you got the cussing for half an hour from the group.
He deserved it. He should have given you 45 minutes.
I wanted to get out of the car. I made you walk and reflect on your actions.
Yeah, it was wild. I held hands up and I took responsibility. I was accountable. But yeah, it was more the length of the call rather than the call itself. Like, the call itself wasn't, because as I said, he's friends with some of his exes as well, you know. As a matter of fact, one of whom I've invited over for Christmas dinner this year.
Oh, wait, hold on. One of his exes.
What's going on?
Actually, Shan, this is a good question because you've dated people with kids before as well, right?
Okay.
So my current
my back is against the wall already.
My current
she already feels attacked.
My current partner has a child. Yeah. And, I met this child recently. He's not a child. He's actually a grown man. He's like in his, let's call him in his teens for the sake of that. Mm-hmm. And he's coming for Christmas this year. You know, we've invited him to come for Christmas this year.
Lovely.
Like, you know, if you want to bring your mom, you should bring her along.
Can I pause you a minute and ask a quick question?
Yeah.
Is he an only child for that mom?
Yeah.
Only the mom now got a partner?
I'm not sure, actually. I don't know.
Okay, carry on. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the end of the story. And so... Right.
So that is my... that is the important question that I need to know. I don't understand. Why did you invite her? Sorry.
Well, because you know, I don't want to start this new family with this individual without making his son feel like he can be a part of his family. And he's extremely close to his mom, like extraordinarily close to his mom.
The thing is for me, yeah, I feel like as long as you feel comfortable in that situation and you've built up enough rapport with the son by that time to still feel comfortable in that situation, then I feel like it's fine. But I don't necessarily think that that was necessary for your end goal. I feel like, no, if I'm keeping it honest, like, don't, you could have easily, for example, you could have easily have celebrated, what's that thing called? Thanksgiving. You could have done Thanksgiving together. Do you know what I mean? You could have done a celebration around Christmas time, but not on Christmas Day together instead. I feel like there's other ways to still get that end goal, personally. I feel like, but maybe it's because of how much I value Christmas, and Christmas is so important to me. Especially in regards to like who I would spend the day with, and with this being like one of your first few Christmas with this your significant other, I personally would want to make sure the day just goes perfect. And I feel like that, adding that to the mix, is a wild, a very much of a wild card. But you've got lots of time to revoke the invite, so let's see how things go from now and then. On the plus side, because you've got this big like goal at the end of the year, it means that you're going to have to naturally have met or conversated between now and then. So that might actually be a really good thing, because now you're going to build a rapport naturally because you've got that end goal. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. But that's good advice. That's great advice. I've never actually dated someone with kids before. So Shan's been giving me tips intermittently every now and again.
Because I feel like with the situation that I had no, like, it changed my perspective. I think before I was in that situation, I was very much like, I'll never be a guy with kids. I'll never, never, never. And then actually the mother of his child didn't cause any problems. She was completely drama free. Do you get what I mean? So it was like, it was easy to be very amicable in situations. But I'm thinking even with that situation where I was very amicable with her and the setup with his son and so forth, I still don't think it would need to be to the extent of she's spending Christmas with me. I'm so sorry. Especially when the child's an adult. If the child was 5 years old, 4 years old, and you don't want to confuse him, or you want to, you know, make that transition period smoothly so that from now on, after that Christmas, they're coming by themselves. I get it, maybe, to an extent. But when you're a big child, you don't need to be doing that. There's no reason. Mm. Come by yourself. You don't need your mom.
I mean, I do get it in the sense that, like, you said that he's an only child. And just say for argument's sake, she's single. Like, she would potentially be spending Christmas by herself. Like, I'm sure she has other family. But it's nice that you've opened that invitation to be like, you know, this isn't a separate family that you're not a part of. This isn't something separate. You're still a part of this. And like Roshan says, like, you have plenty of time to meet her beforehand. Mm-hmm. Like, even if you were to meet her one-on-one, because if this person is coming to your house,
you don't need to do that today, though. It's not even. This is a must.
Yeah. No, you need, if this person is coming to your house on Christmas Day, you want to be like, I feel comfortable with this person.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, go out and drink with them. Because imagine the worst thing that could happen is, you know those situations, yeah, where someone's there who you don't feel completely comfortable with, and somehow you get in a situation where it's just the two of you in a room. And you're like, oh God.
It's long, isn't it? That's why my first thing was, if you feel comfortable, the first thing I said was literally, if you feel comfortable around that person. Because if you know it's not gonna affect your day in a big way, because of course it might be a bit awkward at the start or might be a bit nervous or whatever, then I think that's fine. I think blended families are really important. And I think what society don't do is show stories and situations like this enough. I've seen really, really positive examples of blended families. I don't find them a scary thing at all. But I'm also aware that a lot of people have had quite traumatic experiences and quite unsettling experiences that make the idea of something like that be quite scary. So what you're doing, I think, is great. I was just saying, like, on the other hand, there's other ways to still get that same goal.
For sure, for sure. And it has to be comfortable for everybody, not just me. Like, it can't just be my approach is the way, because if she's not comfortable, then, you know, I have to try something different.
The good thing is that you can cook, do you know what I mean? Because if that was me, I'd be all shaky, shaky.
Yeah, she might cuss you, but she cannot cuss your cooking. So,
do you know what I mean?
God, so many taboos in this world.
Honestly. And on that topic of family, one other taboo that I wanted to bring up that I don't know why I've been thinking about recently, but I just have. I guess maybe because it was Mother's Day, I don't know. But women who are fearful of having kids, mm-hmm. because of, it's a huge pressure.
That's me.
And it's something I think about a lot, that, like, you know, part, like, when someone asks you, do you want kids? The kind of automatic thing is to be like, yeah, yeah, of course I want kids. But when I really deep it, I'm like, what if it goes really wrong? Like, what if it goes really badly?
And it's just like,
yeah. And honestly, girl, I have anxiety already. Like, bringing a child into this world. And it's just like, I guess because, like, we speak about mental health a lot, psychology, and, like, people. And, you know, so much of it goes back to your childhood,
yeah,
and how you were raised and the kind of childhood you have. And it's just so much pressure to, yeah, like, how this person turns out is basically down to you. And I don't feel like men get that same kind of pressure.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I know mine is definitely a direct trauma response to growing up. Mine isn't like so with me, it's not about how I would perform as a mom. I definitely think that I'm naturally, that's something that comes natural to me. But I think mine would be, and it's crazy because I literally, like, was comforting someone about this the other day, but mine would be this scenario. I have a child of someone and they end up being a shit dad. Mm. I would never be able to live with myself ever again. So the way I view the world is that, like, we're all meant to be here to change the script of what our generational story is. Do you get what I mean? So my dad was a bit higgledy haggledy when I was growing up. He's great now, but he was higgledy haggledy. And that higgledy haggledy comes from a lot of trauma. Do you understand what I mean? A lot of emotional turbulence. It's a lot of disruption that I just didn't need to go through as a child. Like, no one would literally pick that out as, like, a dad to have for their child. As I said before, like, now he's great and whatever. So with me changing that generational cycle, the pressure is now on me to make sure that my child has a dad that provides them with everything that my dad didn't and more. Do you get what I mean? So now I have this pressure of, like, meeting someone and judging them first as a father before even a partner, because I think if something was to happen and I got pregnant and we used to split up or whatever, I've got a bank on the fact that they're going to be a good dad. And that idea just freaks me the fuck out, like, completely. And it's scary because it's only now you say that where I've actually deeped it, because when I was talking, I have a relative that had a child recently, and they put, actually I have two relatives that put, two people that I know that put this on their statuses recently. Basically, one was saying their daughter said something like, oh, are you going to find someone who loves you because I need a dad? That was one. And then the other person, and they were basically saying that they feel really down because the dad's become, like, really narcissistic and basically not a positive person. And she feels guilty because she's now going to make her child grow up with that person as a dad. And I was, like, really confident to that person. And it was genuine. And I was basically saying, like, you can't take that responsibility for how that person chose to now be. Do you get what I mean? All you can do is be the best mum that you can be. So whilst when it's not me, I can rationalize it and look at it, like, objectively, I'm not even a mum yet, and I still feel that same pressure that she feels having now been a new mum. Do you get what I mean?
Does your dad being higgity haggity, as you put it, does that come from from trauma that he went through as well? Like, does he have the generation?
Of course. Of course. It's down to me. I have to stop it, Leanne. I have to stop it. And there's so much pressure that comes with it. But it has to end here. It has to.
I have a friend who had a kid with a guy. Knowingly, both of them were on it, like, ready to go, ready to have this child. And then literally the day before she gave birth, he disappeared.
And went where?
And oh, wow.
Moved to Florida. And then just disappeared for like the first years of the child's life. And then came back and was like, hey, I want to be a dad now. And 10 years later, he's still trying to, quote unquote, trying to be a good dad, but really just doing a very half-assed job of showing up when he thinks it's important, but not really being present. And it's hard for a woman because on some level you want them to have some interaction with their father, but at the same end, you have to protect your child from the trauma that you're speaking of as well. It's like, it's a really difficult situation for women to be in.
Yeah, I guess I think that, you know, to some extent, and things are changing, like, of course they're changing, but I think to some extent, we still live in a society where it's like, you know, as a woman, your ultimate goal in life should be to have children, should be to give birth and have children. And it's supposed to be the most magical experience, and it's supposed to be the best thing that ever happened to you. And it's supposed to just be like this inner just desire that you don't question. And I guess what I'm scared of, what I think is a taboo, is like, you know, what if you're just not instantly maternal? Like, what if you just don't have that maternal twang? Or what if you just are? It's, I think people don't realize what a huge responsibility it is, almost, that when you say, oh, I'm not sure if I want to have kids, people are like, why? And you, as if like it's not something you should think long and hard about.
Do you know, it's funny because I guess because of my age, this conversation is starting to come up a lot more with some of my friends, many of whom have actually decided that they don't want to have kids. Like, I have a couple of girlfriends who are nearing 40 and they're just like, yeah, well, I'm not interested. Not even that it's too late, but just like, I'm not interested. And it seems to be, and they face a lot of that outcome. And what it made me realize is that for me, like Shan said, I'm not even I don't think I'll be a bad mother. Like, I think I'd be a good mother as much as I can control what that looks like. But actually, I don't, what scares the shit out of me is actually the process of giving birth. And it's something that we don't
know. Oh my days.
A lot of videos I've watched and freaked myself out.
Girl, I saw that one in Sex Education and I was like, that is enough for me. Thank you. No more.
Videos in Sex Education, we didn't have any videos. It was like, don't have sex.
Yeah, we had a video. It was literally like, here is the woman's vagina. It was like some old 80s, like someone had clearly, like the husband was filming the birth happening. I wonder where they are now. But yeah, like her vagina was shown in like every school in the UK.
But it's interesting because I think we talk about women becoming mothers and we don't actually talk about the process. Like, I don't really talk to my girlfriends about what their birthing process was like. Like, did they cut you? Did they not cut you? Did you, you know, did you have a C-section versus did you push the baby out? It's not, I don't know the nitty-gritty details, other than one of my girlfriends telling me that it was a lie and she'll never have kids ever again.
She said it was a lie.
It's not this magical process that she was doing. It's painful, it hurts. Don't let them trick you. Pregnancy is the worst experience that she's ever, like she said, it's the worst experience of her life. She's happy she has the kid, but she's like, if I have another kid, I'm getting a surrogate.
It's that deep.
But yeah, the process of giving birth scares the shit out of me, big time.
100%. You know, you hear these horror stories about how, like, your vagina and your bum can, like, split.
Yeah,
into one hole. I'm like, girl, I don't know about that.
You can't actually stop, man.
Wait, you ever see that? What's the show where they go on TV, I think it's a Channel 4 show where they go on TV with their medical illnesses and they want somebody to fix it for free, essentially.
Oh, God, what is that show? Embarrassing Bodies. Yeah.
There was a woman that went on there that ripped from back to front. Like,
stop it right now.
Essentially, what they did was they sewed her back up, but they did such a shoddy job that, like, her vagina and anus were essentially attached to each other.
Stop it right now.
And it was the most horrific thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, they fixed it, but her vagina will never be the same again.
Girl.
And I would have that's vagina intact. I don't know about anybody else.
100%. Even stuff like you know, and this kind of goes full circle to when we talked about scars, but like obviously you get stretch marks when you're pregnant and when you give birth. And it's not until more recently that, you know, I've seen social media pages that promote body positivity. I didn't realize like how severe some people's stretch marks get. You know, it's not something we talk about, it's not something you see in the media. Like some women, you know, it's like the whole of their stomach even after the baby's born, and you just don't see that. You just don't see it, people don't talk about it.
And then there's this like long, I'm gonna sound so ignorant to women that have already given birth, but that long dark line down the middle of your stomach, I don't know if you
yes
get, where does that come from? Like nobody talks about these things.
Nobody talks about it. You never see it, like even when like on TV shows when you see a pregnant person, girl, her belly is like glowing and her skin is perfect, and I'm like, what kind of pregnancy is this?
Yeah, and nobody talks about the acne, the nose broadening thing. Like there are so many
your feet growing. The only positive is like your hair gets thicker and longer,
falling out, and who lose their edges once they give birth. One of my girlfriends lost her edges for like 2 years.
Oh my gosh.
Exactly. How do you walk around with no edges for 2 years? Like,
excuse me, right now my left edge is moving a bit mad. You don't walk around, you just hide it. You gotta do what you gotta do to survive in the jungle.
Oh, stop it. The other thing I think of, yeah, you know when you see pregnant women who just look so fashionable and they just carry themselves so well. I will be wearing a nightdress for 9 months.
I wear a nightdress now.
Sliders.
I mean, I hope it will give me a pregnancy glow up.
There's no way I'm making any effort at all. I'm sorry.
Dude, why should you? And you shouldn't have to. Like, you don't have to glorify pregnancy when you're going through it or pretend like it's a great experience if it's not. Although some women have a great experience and they rave about it. But yeah, I feel like you should be as comfortable as humanly possible. You don't be that mom that's like wearing heels in the middle of pregnancy.
That was definitely my mom. She wore heels all the way to the end. You cannot take heels out of my mom.
Really?
Yeah.
She only started wearing trainers like 2 years ago. Maybe if that.
You see, mom wears heels all the time.
That's so funny.
Like, well, less now because she works for herself, but definitely when she worked for like heels or flat, like just generally like flat, smart in shoes. She literally, whenever I see her in trainers, I still find it a shock. Like, oh my gosh, you're in Nikes. Wow.
Bougie till the end, baby. So those are some of our taboos, guys. Hopefully you found it interesting. And if you found it a little uncomfortable, well, that's the point. But yeah, let us know what your
then so be it honey.
But yeah, we'll be interested to know what your taboos are, so get in contact and follow us on all the usual places. We are on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter, and yeah, we will see you next week. We've got some more episodes coming up from us individually where we'll be exploring more issues, so keep subscribed, keep listening, keep supporting the movement.
Do the damn thing. Guys, we'll be back with you next week. Until then, stay blessed and unapologetically black.
All the way black.
Blackity black.
Black-tastic! Black-tastic!